Welcome to the Dork Forest. Jackie and her pals will never bore us. Shameless confessions
about our obsessions
will make us laugh and smile. So let's explore the Dork Forest and dork out for a while.
Hi, Jackie Cation here. You're listening to The Dork Forest. You know the websites, dorkforest.com, thedorkforest.com, if you like a determiner. JackieCation.com has everything. Both of my podcasts, all of the stand-up stuff, the new album, links to YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, all the things. But so, I think, does dorkforest.com, where you can look at old videos of different shows. Anyway, if you want to support the show, tell people about the show, review it on iTunes, thumbs it up on Pandora or Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts, I appreciate that. You can donate. You can donate monthly. PayPal lets you do that. You can also do my Venmo if you like. It's at Jackie Cation absolutely everywhere. And my email address is jackie@jackiecation.com. And that's what the PayPal is. The PayPal link is on jackiecation.com and dorkforest.com. And go to any of them. Thanks for listening. There's merch. There's stand-up. There's tour guide. You know, you can find out where I'm touring. This is getting long. So let's get into the show. Oh my gosh, it's me, Jackie Cation, in my garage. Very exciting. Now with Ramin Nazer. Welcome to the program, Ramin Nazer.
Thanks so much for having me. We're in the Dork Forest. We'll never
dork,
bore us.
Dork.
Rangers. Hello.
Hello, Rangers.
Yay. Hello.
And Ramin Nazer is R-A-M-I-N-N-A-Z-E-R, and that's his Instagram. And then you have a podcast. And the handle is Mind Under Pod, but what is the podcast?
It's called Mind Under Matter. It's me and Shane Moss, another comedian. He does a science podcast.
He's been
called
on the
Here
show.
We Are.
Yeah.
Oh, excellent. Yeah, he's the reason we're here today. He likes to set people up.
He's a helper, Shane Moss.
He is. He's a collaborator.
That man would like to collaborate. So Mind Under, what do you guys talk about?
So he comes from a science-minded thing, like he's more empirical, skeptic, like it's all just spin charge and angular momentum. There's no magic, all magic can be explained, that sort of thing.
Okay.
I like to entertain the mystic more in that, like, no, how could we possibly have a full view of reality? How could we possibly condense it to a beaker and microscope? So we kind of discuss different things every week, whether it's, you know, the subselves or talk about outgroup bias or...
Wow, these are all words. You guys are talking about some real issues that I don't know anything about. But speaking of which, everyone, by the way, Rangers, if you understood any of those sentences and they sound interesting, go listen to Mind Under Pod or follow Mind at Mind Under Pod on all the things and find their podcast for... Shane Moss is a delight, and I'm about to find out that Ramin is a delight. Because you like...
I mean, if
and when and how, I insist that you be delightful. Here it begins. Your dorkdom. The funk bass? The bass that some people use to play funk? Yeah.
I was going to say slap bass. I don't know why I didn't choose slap bass. I think that occurred to me later. But originally, I wrote you saying funk bass, and then you wrote back... What is funk bass? Is it the style? Is it the way they play? Are we talking about the history of what is this thing? How are you defining it?
Right.
And, you know, Prince said, you know, if you can define it, it ain't funky.
Oh.
So you can't really define funk. So I was like, I should just pick the bass guitar. I should do that. No one's picked that yet. It is a very, it's a dorky world. It's a lesser world.
Oh, right. Because it's not usually the front man who plays the bass, right? It's not usually the lead singer kind of person who plays the bass. It's usually part of the team that is a band.
Yeah.
I think of a band as a team and the bass player as the catcher. You're going to need him. You're going to need her. You're going to need them. You're going to need that person. But by gum, nobody cares who that person is. They're not...
Unless... You're doing it wrong, in which everyone knows when they're doing it wrong, but it's kind of like sound. You know how sound people talk about like sound in movies and shows and stuff. You don't notice it when it's good. You don't say, oh, that last Star Wars show had great sound production. But if it sucks, you notice it.
True.
That's the same with the bass or with drums. You notice it when it's bad.
When it's done poorly. Are you a musician, Ramin?
I am. That was my first thing, I guess. I started in violin, then became a guitarist, and then ultimately became a bassist. I still do all those,
okay.
But then it became comedy, and now it's more of the art thing. I still do comedy, I still do music, but in terms of what I have to put on the little IRS thing, the art thing is
right.
More of what I do.
It's a larger umbrella. It's just you're a multifaceted art guy is what's happening there. So you started with the violin. And then were you in, like, the jazz band in high school?
I was in orchestra. We didn't have a jazz band until the later years. And then at that point, there's only, like, 5 slots for it. And I wasn't into jazz yet.
Okay.
I didn't have that patience.
Oh, sure. I still don't. But I have done several episodes about jazz where I often leave knowing a little bit more about jazz and wanting to get into it and then never getting into it.
Who have been recommended? Who are some names that you remember being recommended and then never doing it?
Oh, the jazz musicians? Oh,
yeah.
Oh, I got nothing. I have admitted this before. I once saw Miles Davis perform by accident.
How?
There was no justice there. There's no peace. There's no justice in the fact that I have seen Miles Davis and people who cared have not. I was in Provincetown, Massachusetts. He was playing a town hall. A friend of mine had an extra ticket. Her friend bailed and she said, "Do you want to go?" And I said, "What is it?" And she said, "It's trumpet." And I said, "Oh, I like trumpet. I like marching band trumpet. I like big band trumpet." And it turns out I like Miles Davis because watching someone at that level is just different, right? So
yeah.
It was, I thoroughly enjoyed it, but it was, yeah, it was by accident for sure.
That's the lesson, isn't it? That no matter what it is, even if you're a sock maker or an accordionist or something, if you're the very best of that thing, then
it's compelling.
Then, oh, I'll go see that.
Yeah.
It's kind of like when you said you saw Stephen Wright, the Boston one-liner guy, and you're like, I want to see what 45 minutes of one-liners is, because this is the one-liner guy. I'm not a like consumer of one-liners, but I'm going to go see the person.
Yeah, and it
and there's
turns
always
out it
that for anyone.
Yeah, but it was all entertaining because he essentially the one-liners, like, you know, he famously wrote that joke, "It's a small world, but I wouldn't want to paint it."
Mm-hmm.
You think to yourself, well, is it going to be that for 45 minutes? And it is not. But that kind of, that incredibly short, nugget, tight, awesome joke is mixed in with sort of longer bits. And you're like, oh, this guy should be on, like Wendy Liebman. You're like, this person should be on television doing late night sets every night because they have 5
yeah.
minutes every 365 versions of one line.
But they're doing unproductive stuff that we don't know about.
Or having the time of their lives, I bet.
Hopefully.
Yeah. So you clearly like the use of bass guitar in a funk setting.
Yes. I think it's one of the most important vibes there is. I think it calms the mind chatter for me specifically. And I think more people are into it than they realize. If they were to be subjected to it, subjected sounds like a bad word, that always sounds abusive. If they were to be introduced, welcomed into it live, and so much of music now, although we have more access to it, we've got our Spotify and Tidal and Apple Music, and you know, no one's seen a CD since 1987.
You can still get my new CD and DVD at JackieCation.com. Staycation, come get it. Okay, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, and don't forget to get We'll Never Be Bread, and don't forget to also get...
yeah, they're also not playing those on Spotify anymore or Pandora, so knock yourself out. Yeah.
Why not? What happened?
There's some sort of lawsuit happening where they're trying... Somebody asked Spotify and Pandora, and I think SiriusXM, to treat stand-up comedy as if it were a song, and thus pay the person who wrote the joke as well as the person who performed the joke. So 2 checks.
Oh, that's fun.
Right. Wouldn't that be amazing? And Spotify said, yeah, we're not gonna do that. And so we're going to just take stand-up off of Spotify.
They took all of it off?
Almost all of it. They have
and then they
some
gave
up.
Rogan an extra $10 million
right,
or something.
Right, exactly.
There we had this laying around.
We just had this money just sitting around. So so you can still stream and listen to all of my albums on Amazon and Apple iTunes, Apple Music. So because they sell the full albums digitally.
And Tidal.
Yeah. So you can listen.
I'm the only person with Tidal in the whole world.
What is Tidal?
I think Jay-Z started it. The only reason I have it is... because I was a big Prince fan, still am, but he was not going to put his music online, but then cut a deal with Jay-Z because Jay-Z had, you know, a plan for it. We're going to pay artists more. We're going to show the credits, this kind of thing. And then, so he ended up putting his new albums only on Tidal. So I was like, I'll sign up for a Tidal trial. And then here we are, how many years later? 7 years later. Because I don't cancel stuff.
No, nobody does. Too much work. Are you kidding me? We still have things we're not looking at. I still get DVDs from Netflix. But the Babette's Feast, it's sitting on top of my tuner. Anyway, so we have a tuner hooked up to the TV. Okay, so the bass guitar, is it got more strings? I feel like it's using a
less
strings.
It's got less strings. It's got 4 strings. It's an octave lower than what a guitar is. So the guitar has the E A D G B and then the high E.
Yep.
And then the bass has the E A D G. That's it. And you might think that's lesser, but it's not lesser. There's still infinite moves within there.
Do you think it creates more inventiveness because there's only 4?
Yeah, it creates more inventiveness. Plus the players I like a lot, you find that they ended up being bassists out of necessity. No one grew up wanting to, I want that one. They wanted to do something else. Stuff happened. And then there they are holding it, whether it's, you know, Paul McCartney, Larry Graham, Jaco Pastorius, all these guys. Like,
that's how I started bass clarinet. They didn't have a bass clarinet in my band. So they were like, we'll give you a free bass clarinet.
Oh, nice. Those look cool, and they sound so unique.
Right. They sound very unique, but you spend a good portion of your time going 1, 2, 3, 4, 2, 2, 3, 4, 12, 2, 3, 4, dot, 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 1, 2, 3, 4, 2, 2. Anyway, so, but who are your favorite bass players?
So I sent you a list that I like. I don't think I'm going to hit all of them, but
I'm going to miss
lots of people, and I'm sure some people are going to be like, "Well, what about how could you not say
right.
this?" And that's great. Write it in the comments. Give this podcast 5 stars.
That's it.
Write a review. Subscribe. Notification bell. Send money to the Venmo. Take out a new credit card. Send some more money. Support the Dork Forest. But I wanted to start with one in particular that. Because I wanted to talk about slap bass a lot, because I feel like slap bass is seen as this annoying macho kind of thing, or they think of Seinfeld, like, oh, the Seinfeld song, that's all you got, slap the bass.
Okay, yeah, I can even, do you know the theme song to Barney Miller?
Maybe I do, but not off the label.
Well, when we get offline, you should go, because it has a bass, and I don't know if that's slap bass. What makes it, are you actually hitting the guitar?
Yeah, you're hitting it, and Larry Graham, who invented it,
okay,
which this is very fascinating, because with all other techniques, like, you know, Eddie Van Halen with tapping, or Jimi Hendrix's use of the tremolo, all these things, like when you're looking back through music history, they're like, well, punk rock was invented by, you know, it's sort of the Ramones, sort of Sex, sort of, like, it's very blurry. And slap bass is like this one thing where you look anywhere, you go like, oh yeah, slap bass was invented by Larry Graham in 1972.
Wow.
Like, it's a distinct invention story out of necessity,
right,
because
right.
he was in a band with his mom, and it was just him, his mom, and this old organ, and the old organ broke down, and he was using the organ pedals to hold down the low end, Larry Graham was,
okay.
and then the drummer left, so there was no rhythm section, so he's just left there with this bass, and then he decided, like, what if I can make, like, kind of a bass drum sound by plucking it?
Yeah.
Okay, that sounds all right. What if I had slapped it here and then plucked that, so it would recreate a bass hi-hat sort of dynamic, and he called it thumping and plucking, and then it became slap bass later. But
in 1972, Larry Graham invented slap bass. What was
yes.
the name of the band that him and his mother were in? Do you remember?
I don't remember the one him and his mother were in, but he played with Sly and the Family Stone. Are you familiar?
I am.
Sly?
Mostly because Sly Stone.
Yes.
There we go. Was on the Dick Cavett Show, and I am a nerd, and I watched that interview. And go on YouTube and watch Sly Stone on Dick Cavett, because he's usually sitting next to some right-wing politician, and Sly Stone is clearly stoned, probably, drunk, possibly, just sitting there and just staring at him, just smiling and shaking his head. It's literally, and then he'll lean in and say something, and you're like, oh, he's paying attention. And then he'll lean back and then just smile, shake his head. I love Sly Stone. So.
Yeah, it's a shame that he kind of fell apart, but luckily got some of his royalties back recently.
Oh, good.
But was living in a van for, I think, a decade.
Oof. That is unfortunate. So Larry
Graham.
He's
one of those sad stories of, you know, you're, that's him. That's him with the white hat.
Larry Graham has
got
a white hat.
White base, dressed in all white, Graham Central Station.
Graham Central, ladies and gentlemen, we could just end the Dork Forest right here, because that is the dorkiest, most awesome name. so he invented the slap bass and then played with Sly and the Family Stone.
Yes.
I love their music. Their music has that vibe, has that sort of where you're like, you know all the songs, but you don't know why you. I mean, I know all the songs because I've been to gas stations and grocery stores and have had AM, FM radio on the entirety of the 70s when I was a child.
Yeah. Have you seen Summer of Love, that Questlove documentary?
No. Is it really good?
So. Yeah, it won an Oscar. It's a lot of fun. It's you know, about the Harlem Music Festival, and it's going on at the same time as the, you know, the moon landing. It's like showing that contrast of like,
sure,
you know, the war in the streets, Whitey's on the moon, blah, 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 Whitey's on the moon, that kind of
okay
thing. But more about how cool the festival is, not so much about how we're suffering and there's landing on the moon. That was just one point of it.
The moon landing is when this comes out, July 20th. 2022 is when this particular episode will drop, and I was born. That's right. Actually,
you were born on the moon landing?
Yeah, one small step for Jackie is what they said. I don't know if you remember that. Actually, is it the moon landing? No, this will come out the 19th, and then the moon landing was the 20th.
Moon landing Eve. That's when they're like, that's when they're at their most nervous. They're like, oh, is this thing going to blow up? Will right. I get to go off first? Will I even get to step
but there,
on the moon?
But there's a Harlem Music Festival happening probably on the 19th as well.
Yeah,
so.
And on that documentary, Sly Stone is playing amongst many other people, Stevie Wonder, and I forget now at this point. I'm in podcast mode, and you can't have dead air on podcasts. You can't be
right,
like, was it 72 or 73? Should you listen to this or something
right.
else?
If there were editing, if there was any sort of, but that's not why we listen to podcasts. We listen for the blurt and in the hopes.
Yeah, we want the parasocial relationship. That's what we do it for.
That's it. What,
yeah.
So he invents it in 72. Does it sort of take off?
It does after, I think, after Sly and the Family Stone has gotten really big, much like with, you know, Hendrix's style of playing or Eddie Van Halen's style of playing. Like, once you have a paradigm shift, it starts to get copied and built upon, not just like, oh, straight up copying and it's bad. Like, people add more to it. They make additional techniques. It gets annoying, like 80% of it is annoying.
Oh, really?
Because they're missing the soul part of it. They're missing that you have to stay within the groove. Like Victor Wooten says, never lose the groove to find the note, which is a good life lesson too. Like, we're always trying to find
who's
that.
Who's Victor Groot?
Victor Groot. I love Victor Groot, but it's Victor Wooten.
I want it to be Groot. How do you spell his last name?
W-O-O-T-E-N.
Okay, so Victor Wooten.
So he's like two generations, I would say, after Larry Graham. That's what slap bass kind of becomes, plus other styles, in the 90s. He's at the height of early internet sharing videos. I remember me and my other orchestra band friends would share videos of him that you couldn't get streaming. There was no YouTube, but you would get it off of like FTP sites.
Okay,
file transfer. Share zip
yeah.
files. Yes. So things like that, and you know, the bass battles, that's where it kind of gets a little macho and annoying, but it's not with these characters, not with the innovators, only with the copiers.
Okay.
That it gets innovating. But I wanted to say one more thing about Larry Graham before we moved on to anyone else. Did you know that Larry Graham is the reason that Prince became a Jehovah's Witness?
No.
And it was after 10 years of, it was an ongoing conversation for 10 years. So it wasn't just like sitting down with a pamphlet. I love that it's this long arc where Prince eventually concludes, like, this is the truth.
Right.
And they go to people's houses.
That is the longest pitch in the world. That guy just kept working them, just going, well, you don't know. I mean, once a year, I see my Mormon friends, and they absolutely never bring it up. But if they were, like, imagine if every year they brought it up, and then, like, next year, I was like, you guys, I'm becoming a Mormon. It's like that. That'd be so wild. The fact that so Larry Graham was a Jehovah's Witness.
Yeah, I think he became one in the mid-70s. I think it's the same arc. It's either you go too hard with the drugs and alcohol and partying and you die, or you find something, whatever that something is, that changes your life path. And I think with him, it was
the
Jehovah's Witness.
It's true.
I honestly don't know a lot about Jehovah's Witnesses other than
that they come to the door and they want to hand you stuff. I don't know what they're witnessing. I am unfamiliar with their, and they don't let you have a birthday party. They don't want
that's
you.
True.
That's one of the, they're not big on holidays or birthdays. And, because one of my cousins, that's right, Humparcation, his wife was a Jehovah's Witness. And so my cousins, his kids were Jehovah's Witnesses. He was not, but it felt like a bit of a drag. No Christmas, no birthdays.
It's the reason they say they don't, from what I understand, is that every day you're being reborn. Every day you're witnessing Jehovah's vision. You're just the witness to which God sees everything. And if you put one day as special, then that's making all the other days not special. So every day is your birthday. But it doesn't sound like they're living it like that.
Right,
but Mormons do. Mormons are so happy.
Oh,
in a creepy way.
Well, eventually, the first 2 days with a Mormon is the best days of your life. The third day, you're like, is this a put on? And then, but there's whenever I play Salt Lake City, I always think to myself, if the world ever ends, I want to be around Mormons because they were raised to share. And you gotta love that. So this is not about Jehovah's Witnesses, though, or the Mormons. This is about the base.
Oh, that's right.
Right. What's the brand? What's the jam? What do you love?
In terms of the base?
Yeah.
Okay, so I already went to Larry Graham, talked about Sly and the Family Stone, Graham Central Station. Prince, very known as a guitar player, underrated as a bass player, not very much recognized as a bass player. In fact, not a lot of footage of him on it, but there's stories and little clips here and there. But have you heard the story of Dave Grohl getting invited to go play with Prince? And Dave Grohl is on the drums, and Prince just played the bass the whole time. And Dave Grohl was so blown away. He's like, he was the best bass player ever. I'd never heard anything like it.
Wow.
And it's just gone in the ether. He would do that a lot. A lot of the stuff he would do is just gone.
Was it at one of his parties?
No, it was just a private thing. Like, just one day he showed up and goes like, or he sends someone to say, Prince would like to play with you tonight.
Well, because at his, essentially his house, which has
Paisley Park.
Yeah, Paisley Park outside of Minneapolis, he would play all night, and he would invite musicians, and he recorded all of it, supposedly.
Yeah, it's sitting somewhere on a shelf, hopefully
it's
not decaying.
It's next to the Ark of the Covenant, you know, I mean, it's somewhere safe. And so you may one day get to hear the Dave Grohl, Prince noodling around on the bass.
I hope so. And I hope by then I won't just be so over it, because my brain will have been, it's already melted, but now, like, it's going to get melted so many more times. We're not even halfway through whatever all this is.
Right. What is it? And do you have a favorite Sly and the Family Stone or Larry Graham? Graham. I wanted to go Graham Cracker. It's a music episode, Rangers. I don't know, Jack. So
I knew that going in. I thought it would be more fun that way.
Graham Standing.
I also did want to do...
I wanted one of his albums to be called Graham Standing. And
it might be.
Oh, why wouldn't it be? Anyway, go ahead. I keep interrupting you because I think you're nice. Go ahead.
Oh, thank you. I like that. I want more of that. Bring it on. let's see, some of my favorites. I mean, I could go on and on, but
please do. And I drink coffee.
Larry Graham, you could try Hair. That's a good track to start with. Or just look on YouTube. Just look at him give instructionals of his favorite bass lines. And someone wrote in the comments, I thought this was a perfect description of them. He said, this man is the real deal. He sings, dances, invents a new technique, and then shows you how he did it. Just class act.
That, yeah, that is a very positive YouTube comment right there.
Yeah, there's probably negative ones too, but not to Larry. But he's still doing great. I mean, he's lived longer than Prince even. He's outlasted many of his contemporaries, and always with a big smile on his face. Still goes to the church. Always dressed in white. Is still happily married. Yeah, happily married for however many years. Wife always like is with him on the road. All these things like very.
That's amazing.
Very positive. Energy. Rest in peace, Brody Stevens.
Yeah.
But before we get too far into Larry Graham world, I wanted to ask if you knew about Weather Report. Do you know about Jaco Pastorius?
I think Weather Report makes me think of the Weather Underground, which was a bomb plot in Chicago. What is Weather Report?
So Weather Report was a jazz fusion group from the 70s also. I'm starting off here in the 70s. The origin of the funk bass kind of vibe of things. But what about Joni Mitchell? Do you know Joni Mitchell at all?
I do enjoy Joni Mitchell. Did a Dork Forest about Joni Mitchell. My first question, is she still alive?
She is.
She is, and she's still performing and creating. So that's neat. Does she play funk?
Yeah, and she had polio. She had polio when she was just a tiny kid, and she made it out of that and is 90 now. So
yeah. So did she play funk bass or slap bass?
No, but she had Jaco Pastorius collaborated with her during some stuff, and the way they were introduced is that Joni, because she writes all these weird chords, and then was playing with a very strict, jazz kind of guy, and he said, "I'm not playing that. That's not the root of the chord." And then she says, "Well, it is the root if you do it the way I say it is, because that's the song I'm making." And then he says, "There's this weird bass player in Florida who's doing that stuff. You'd probably like him." And so that's how she got introduced to this guy. Another one of my favorites who was introduced to it out of necessity because he hurt his wrist. He was a drummer and he hurt his wrist because during a football game in high school or even before high school, all the boys teamed up on him and piled up on him because he was too cocky and he was too good at stuff, but he was boastful and they're like, "We'll show him." So permanently broke his wrist, so he couldn't do that anymore. The past is rough. So is now. But the past is rough and now is rough because they're trying to bring the past back.
I wish I named these episodes because the past is rough would be the name of this episode. So his name was Jaco?
Yeah, J-A-C-O.
Okay.
He would introduce himself during live performances as, "My name is John Anthony Pastorius III. I'm the greatest bass player in the world." That was kind of one of his lines he would tell people. And he was married to a woman named Tracy. And one time Tracy was playing one of these, softball games, like work with other musician things. I don't know how it got formed, but someone took notice of her and said "Oh, she's cute. I'm going to go talk to her." And then turns out, she's married. And then she says, "Oh, I'm sorry. I'm married to the greatest bass player in the world." And then the guy laughs and says, "Okay." And then eventually meets the guy and then is like, "Oh, I hear you're the best bass player in the world." And then he says, "Yep, I am." Oh. And it's like, "Well, why don't you come by sometime? Show me what you got." And then the first thing he plays is Donna Lee, which is old Charlie Parker solo, and plays it with the articulation of a saxophone. And then this guy has never seen or heard anything like this in his whole life. So that's how he got his first record deal, is by saying he's the best in the world, the guy calling him on his bluff, and then
showing up. Mm-hmm. That is the thing about if you say you're really good, if you could produce once you get there, and musicians, I think, do that kind of almost more than comics do, and more than a lot of other musicians tend to have to brag it up and then produce more than other art forms, I think.
Unless you're like Chappelle or something, because Chappelle will be like, "When I go out, I make history."
Yeah. But the thing is more likely it's like, do you remember that Bernie Mac at the Apollo? Did you ever see that?
So
the Apollo in Harlem is famous for booing comics off the stage. And yes. So this is from probably the 80s, like mid-80s, maybe the early 90s, late 80s. Don't know. All I know is I saw it, and Bernie Mac goes up, and they had just booed somebody off, or there had been some sort of trouble. And so he goes up, he tells his first joke. It doesn't land great, and they start to mumble. And so he says, "You don't scare me." And you can hear in his voice that they kind of scare him. And then he tells another joke. And then he goes, "You don't scare me." And it builds. And by the end of it, standing ovation. Like, they lose their minds. Like, people are jumping on the seats and just going, "Say it again." And he's like, "You don't scare me." And so it doesn't really, that's when it happens in stand-up. It happens organically. It doesn't happen. It's weird when someone says, "My stand-up is like the Mona Lisa." And you're like, "You're killing me." Because you are very talented. And yet, that's an inside your head voice. So
yeah, you're supposed to say, "Oh, that was terrible. That tag was stupid. I hate myself."
How about, "Thank you very much. Here's another joke." You don't have
even
to
even better.
You don't even have to talk about it at all. You can just say, "Thanks." Full sentence. So
or Mitch Hedberg, we kind of loved how opposite of confident he was. We loved that he stared at the floor and couldn't even have his
and
eyes
of course
visible.
That ended poorly because he had such issues with his self-esteem that he, you know, ended up ODing on heroin. Which brings us to
the sad tale of Jocko too, which opposite of Larry Graham. Larry Graham is still alive, very healthy. All this positive. Jocko had a very tragic tale, and he was bipolar in a time when I don't think there was even a word for it yet. You were just strange. You were just mental. Oof. You were whatever the thing was. So there was no real treatment for it. Maybe there was early lithium or something with it, but basically he kind of slowly but quickly unwinded. That doesn't make sense. Slowly but quickly. Maybe right. Over the course of a few years, became more and more unraveled, and it kind of fed into itself because, like I said, he would say, "I'm the best in the world." He was this larger than life personality where
there we go.
There he is.
If you're watching on YouTube, you can see his beanie. Mm-hmm. He seems like a quite a groovy dude. Truth, liberty, and soul.
And look at the album cover of the black and white one. That's just the self-titled one. It's probably under the first things Google Images pulls up.
Yeah.
You see just the black and white where he's looking at you?
I got that where he looks like Geronimo.
Just look up Jocko album, maybe.
Okay. So
everyone at home, look up, or if you're driving, look up Jocko album. Pull your phone out.
Especially if you're driving. Yeah.
Yeah. So Joni Mitchell said that the first time she saw that photo, he just looked like the sage, you know, monk that like has it all figured out. Like just look, it's black and white and he's like calm looking there, and then meets the guy in real life. And, you know, he's wearing a Phillies hat. He's tall. He has the strawberry blonde hair. He's like always shirtless, always running around, like in his kind of, he encompassed both of those, like the wise sage, but he's this wild man that would play everything on the record correctly in the first take and then just throw the bass and then, "All right, let's go play basketball." He was always, he was too much.
Right. And he was made of bees. Yeah.
He was made entirely of bees. And there's a great book about him. That's I think it's the only biography there is, but like even early childhood friends of him would have stories of him being like this Mowgli character that would defy the odds, like sliding down this rocky stream. And like, surely he's going to die. The water is like 2 feet deep, but would magically skip like a stone. Like they would witness him doing these things in nature. Like, how is this kid a Mowgli?
Yeah. Just right. Right.
Like that.
Yeah. That's crazy.
And so, yeah, so he brought that to the instrument, and he was known to never have a case for the instrument. He had this bass that's all beat up, like every way you can think of it. It's called the Bass of Doom. That's what he called it. He originally wanted to play the upright bass after the drums.
Yeah.
But it was too hot and humid in Florida, and then the upright bass just fell apart into a million pieces.
Right, especially if you're carrying it around without a case. Yeah.
Yeah, that's... so he switched to electric, and there was no such thing as the fretless electric at the time, but he tore the frets out. I don't know if you know the difference between the frets and the no frets.
No.
So frets are these metal things that are on guitars and basses that let you stay within the whole tone so that you can't slide in between colors, basically. So there's no mix of like a red and an orange. It's like red, orange, yellow, green.
This sounds like Guitar
solid.
Hero. I'm so sorry. But is
that's a good way of thinking of it.
Yeah? Because is the whole tone, is that chords? Or
chords
are
combinations of tones.
Okay.
Like I'm saying... The traditional Western music for the past 700 years, like on a piano, there's 12 notes. That's why there's 12 keys. You can't go in between them. Like if you hit a C, the next key you hit is going to be a D, or it's going to be a C sharp if you hit the black one. But you can't hit in between them.
Right.
But in tearing the frets off of his bass, and then he poured this epoxy resin for boats on it. And then so he made the first fretless bass where you could go in between.
Oh, wow.
The tone so that it would be more like an upright. So at the time, everyone was like, what is that sound? Where did that come from? This is...
What's a good
no
example
internet.
Of a song like that? What's...
It has a fretless...
Yeah, a fretless...
I mean, anything from
Jacko.
His catalog, the Joni Mitchell Shadows and Light
okay.
album, the Joni Mitchell Mingus album, the Pat Metheny Bright Size Life
okay.
album...
So any of that, he's playing, and he's playing on the very first, essentially, fretless bass guitar.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah, and he would carry this thing that's all beaten up everywhere. Like, sometimes after a show, if he's particularly manic, he just throws it behind the stage, and you kind of wonder, like, oh, is someone there to catch it?
Right.
Nope, there's no one there to catch it. It just went somewhere. Hopefully it didn't hit someone in the head.
Did you see that video of Prince playing with Paul McCartney,
and he
throws it up in the sky, and you're like,
still no one knows. No one knows where it went.
Someone must have been up there going catch, and that was the only time I've ever seen Prince. I mean, I don't know a lot about Prince, so
isn't that crazy? And you're from Minneapolis. I wonder if that's are you from Minneapolis
outside of Milwaukee, but I'm a Minneapolis comic, so that's my home.
Oh, that's why.
Yeah, so that's my home.
Because you've done two Prince episodes. There was like a Christopher Titus one, and there's a
It wasn't Virginia.
Tim Harmston.
Oh, Tim Harmston.
Tim Harmston's a big Prince guy. I know this.
You would have thought I wanted him to talk about the Green Bay Packers because he had lost his mind and has for the last 40 odd years about the Green Bay Packers. But he was like, no, I want to talk about Prince. And I was like, okay. And then and then we talked about, it was nice. But oh, I know, it was Virginia Jones talked about Bowie. So it's not that I get them mixed up. I don't. I just, it's that they're of a genre. You know, they're essentially they were the cool bands that I should have, cool musicians that I should have been following instead of.
And they were androgynous at a time when it wasn't, I mean.
When it was new.
You could argue that it's still not accepted, but it's like very unaccepted back then.
Right, right.
Very,
they
like,
were breaking ground. They were doing the,
yes.
They were doing the Lord's work there, and it was great. And I liked it, but I was still, for some reason, listening to my weird, you know, 70s, what is now called yacht rock. And
what's that, like Eagles, Chicago?
Yeah, any of that.
Journey. Fleetwood Mac, Journey.
Harry Chapin and Billy Joel were, and neither of those are particularly yacht rock, but, you know, and Billy Joel was sort of beaten out of me when I went to the East Coast a lot, because if you're ever in New York or New Jersey, they won't stop playing Billy Joel. And you're like, I'm a fan, and you have to put it down. Something else. Anything else. And so.
Yeah, we all have our limit. Isn't that crazy? Don't you wish, like, I mean, with food, that would be one thing. You can't just eat food forever because there's physical limits. But it sucks that our brain acclimates to music to where if you listen to a song two or three times in a row, it's like, enough.
Yeah.
So didn't you just love it? Don't you want that
didn't
groove
just,
to maintain?
Yeah, yeah. That's,
more.
That's sort of weird. And then I've done a great episodes about ska. And, you know, I like funk a great deal. but I don't know a lot about it, you know, because Andy, my husband, he plays mostly funk around the house. And because that's his favorite kind of music. But he loves Prince, and we all do. We all like all different kinds of music. But one of his favorite is funk. So I'm hoping to show him the Jacko, Joni Mitchell. He enjoys Joni Mitchell.
Oh, excellent. Which I wouldn't call Jacko funk per se, but he, or not in that his style is traditional funk bass, but he had that in the groove. Like, his grooves were very funky. Like, Jimi Hendrix was not a funk act, but like, listen to Dolly Dagger or something like that. It's very in the groove of it. Same with Bowie. In fact, George Clinton would say that he ripped off the song We Want the Funk. You know, We Want the Funk. Yeah. Everyone's heard We Want the Funk. He ripped it off from David Bowie's Fame. He will straight up say in interviews, like, I was listening to David Bowie's Fame and I just wanted that. That groove. So I just changed it from Fame to We Want the Funk.
Okay.
And that's it.
So, and David Bowie listens to him tell that story and go, yeah, that's, you can have that. That's not anything. It's sort of like saying, I am also writing a joke about airline food. Fair enough. Don't sweat it. You please do. And that's awesome.
Remember airline food? I haven't seen it in years. Yeah. I mean, there's Biscoff cookies, but
it's not enough. Whenever they're like, would you like a cookie or would you like pretzels or would you like nuts? And I'm like, is it that weird biscotti? And they're like, yeah. And I said, I don't want that. And it isn't.
I'll take yours. I've got the disease that makes them tolerable.
They're doing almonds right now because they can't have peanuts on the plane. So.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. I think almonds would take people down more.
Well, it's maybe next year, maybe when we all become acclimated to almonds. So who's next on your list?
Okay. So I talked about Jocko. I talked about Prince. I talked about Larry Graham. You like the Talking Heads at all? Tina Weymouth?
No, but yeah, yes, I am familiar with the Talking Heads, but that is it.
She's a good example of not necessarily the most like flashy and amount of things going on, but the most memorable, infectious grooves you've ever heard. And I think pretty much all the best Talking Heads songs are as a result of her laying down that.
What's her name?
That foundation. Tina Weymouth.
Tina.
W-E-Y and then mouth, as in
right.
Thing you scream jokes with.
Right, joke hole. Yeah. So Tina Weymouth is the bass player for the Talking Heads.
Yes, and Tom Club, which is basically Talking Heads without, what's his name, David Byrne.
Oh, okay.
And they had a falling out because I think he wanted it to end and they didn't want it to end. And that whole, bands just cannot get along.
Well, they're trapped in that van for so many years before they make it. That's my theory. And they all have to share hotel rooms. At least comedians traditionally have always gotten their own hotel rooms. So, because we're loners. And
yeah. And we figured it out early.
Yeah. Yeah. So, so her, does she play fretless or does she play?
No. Just regular
bass.
You know what? I don't even remember what she has. Like, I'm normally good about people's gear, and I can't remember what. Maybe it's like just a Fender Precision Bass or something like that. But check out the Stop Making Sense concert of Talking Heads, and just pay attention to her. In fact, someone even made a compilation video of the Stop Making Sense concert film, but just Tina, just parts where she is on the camera.
Okay. Wow. I'm trying to figure out, you guys, there's a website called Equipboard, EQIPBOARD, and it will tell you what everyone's equipment is.
That is what I'm going to spend the rest of my night doing.
Right. You're like, what could it be? She has, it looks like she has at least four guitars, a Fender Mustang bass.
Mustang, that's what I was thinking.
A Fender Music Master bass, a Hofner 500/2 club bass, and a Gibson Les Paul Triumph something.
Oh, interesting. I didn't know much about that one. I think the Hofner is the violin kind of shaped one that Paul McCartney has. You know, when.
Does Paul McCartney play bass?
He sure does. And that's another story of necessity, I think. I don't think he wanted to have that role. I think he was another guitar player like John and George. But have you seen Nowhere Boy?
No. What's that?
It's a movie about a young John Lennon and shows his dynamic with his mom. Like his mom had, mental health issues and lost his father in early day. And you see where his chip on the shoulder came from, why he's such a brooding,
right,
angsty young boy. But the brilliant thing about the movie is they don't say the word Beatles in it once. It's not about the Beatles. It's about them. It's mainly about John, but how the Beatles came together. And then at the end, he's like telling his aunt, hey, I've got a new band. Do you want to hear what it's called? And then she goes, no, it probably just all sounds the same to me. I never even say the word Beatles. I thought that was a beautiful choice. But there's this brilliant scene where Paul walks in and one of his friends introduces him to John and says, this is Paul. He plays too. And John says, what, with himself? Well, I do. Good for the wrist muscles. Name's John. But.
Wow. There's a lot of swinging dick energy among musicians.
It's nothing but. I mean, it is this weird thing, the guitar, when you think about it, is this phallic,
yeah,
symbol, but it's also got the feminine shape,
right?
in the
body.
In the body of it. And
but then it's got that whammy thing, which is a protuberance.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, it's a lot of something Freudian is going on, whether we're aware
Freud
of it or not.
Freud would be so psyched that we were talking about it. What is there? But you said that the bass players are usually not quite as aggro. I'm putting words in your mouth. Allow me to tell you what you may or may not have said.
Do it.
Is the lead guitarist more aggro than the bass player in a band?
Probably statistically, I mean, none of this is across the board,
right,
but if I were to place my money on it, it's probably more likely.
The
showing off, looking off person in the singer role and the guitar role, whereas the rhythm section, the bass and the guitar, are probably more concerned with like, let's keep this all together and then they can do what they want, but we need to like make sure the bills are paid.
Right, right.
Back here.
So like the second guitar, the bass guitar, and the drummer kind of fade back and try to. I see that they look at each other a lot. Those.
Yeah, there's a lot of communication going on.
Yeah, they're just like, so are we all on the same beat? Are we all doing? What do you want to do? You want to do something fun? And yeah, so.
Yeah, you can change the energy of the room without people even knowing that you're the one that did it. They won't know where to look. Someone pulled something. It's very much like the role of a writer or editor. And there's like countless stories about, this might not be true, but I remember something like this. But have you heard that, you know, George Lucas's wife is the reason Star Wars was edited the way it was? Like,
yeah,
she's responsible for that. Or like Feynman's wife like did this or something. There's like always someone in the background that like did some stuff that's not credited for it.
Right, right.
And then I feel like that's what a rhythm section kind of is. They're not as credited.
Right. They're not
for...
they're not as spotlighted, but they're definitely. And that's, I mean, it's true. If like you're hanging out with somebody for 24 hours, they're going to affect how you write. That's why I always thought that bands, when they publish the songs, the whole band writes the song, you know, especially if they're, you know, performing it as it's, you know, coming together, you know, because.
Yeah.
Because, like, my jokes are different today than they were 15 years ago when I wasn't with Andy, my fella. And he has affected my stand-up. And so I'm going to say it publicly, you guys. He gets half the royalties if we split up. And so
that's Nashville rules, actually. I heard that I don't live in Nashville. I've never set foot in Nashville, but I know that the rules in Nashville are if you're in the room when the song is being written, you're like, it's evenly split pie.
Oh, my gosh.
Even if you're just like filling up your water cup or something.
Right, you're just like, can I just get in there? Get in there real quick. The Coen brothers are writing something. And so...
And then there's the opposite, which I'm painting him to be more villainous than he is, but it's a good lesson of, it's never enough for people. But I heard recently that Paul McCartney is trying to legally get some of the Beatles catalog changed from Lennon McCartney to McCartney Lennon. And doesn't that show that just It's never enough.
It's never,
you're a billionaire. Right, he's dead. He's been dead for 30 years. You're doing what?
You're fighting a corpse and you're not living check to check. So seriously, this can't possibly matter. Does he have 900 children that he's trying to make all billionaires? Like, it's so weird.
Only then will I allow this.
Only then will I allow it. It's, and everyone.
And I'm sure it's, you know, also his, you know, his team or something doing it or things like that. But for the sake of the story, it's nice to paint it. This man still does not have enough.
It's always nice to paint the villainous billionaire. Even though I am going to write that book about two billionaires who fall in love and become better people because of it.
not good people, just better people.
Right, right. Oh, no. It's going to be based on Elon Musk and J.K. Rowling. So
it's going to
be very heteronormative. And tab A, slot A, that's it. They're both in their 50s. So it's not going to be that exciting of a book as far as the writing's going to be amazing. The story, you're going to be like, I saw this coming. Paul McCartney, is he a great bass player as well? Is it just fun to watch
him? He is, in that he's great in that he's very innovative and another left-handed guy. Interesting, thinking of left-handed guitarists, most people don't notice that. Other guitar players do, because when you're watching it, that mirror neuron thing, you're like, why are they holding it backwards?
Yeah.
Why have they always held it backwards? And then you realize they're a lefty.
They're a lefty, but the strings also have to be reversed so that the bottom one's on the top and the top one's on the bottom.
Most of the time you'd think so, but someone else I was going to bring up later, but I'm going to just bring them up now because this fits them perfectly, is this guy, Mono Neon.
Okay.
His name is, I forget his non-stage name, but it doesn't matter. I'll just refer to him as a stage name, but he is what's at the cutting edge of what the evolution of funk bass has become in terms of today, where now he's mixing stuff with Instagram clips and is uploading videos of it. But he plays left-handed, although he's not left-handed. And for whatever reason, that's just why he picked it up and started doing it that way and then learned the wrong way. And because of that, he can do stuff that other people can't.
Huh. It's sort of like when in The Princess Bride, when they're fighting and they're both fighting left-handed, and what you didn't know is that I'm not left-handed, and so and then he's like, neither am I. So can Mono Neon play right-handed as well? Have you seen him play both ways?
I don't know. Maybe he can't. Maybe he can't do the other way.
Okay.
But what he can do on the way he's set up to do it is very interesting. And he's one of these guys that grew up just listening to records and not really knowing that, oh, okay, this is played by this instrument and this one is this, therefore I can only stay in this lane. Like when you're just hearing music, you're like, music is music. I'm holding this thing so I can do any kind of music with it.
Right.
And such a quiet, he kind of channels a little bit of Prince energy in that he's got that mystique, but not in the same way. But for example, when interviewed, his questions are very short, like just yes or no. And someone asked him, like, what's the secret to happiness? He's like, I don't know, just do stuff, I guess.
Oh my gosh. So and, he's adorable.
The other one was, what kind of music do you listen to normally? He's like, I don't listen to a lot of music. I like to watch a lot of pranks on YouTube.
Oh my God, that's hilarious. He is Neon. It turns out Mono Neon, this is possibly not his birth name. Is that what I'm hearing?
No, it's Dwayne something. What is his name?
That's, but Mono Neon, he just, so does he only play, look how big his hands are.
Yeah, he's got big mitts.
Yeah. But
sometimes that helps. Oh, Dwayne Thomas Jr.
Okay.
There we go. So he's from Memphis, Tennessee, played with Prince just before he died. Like he was circling and he was around that circle.
Yeah.
Judith Hill, another very funky person.
Was also in that circle as well?
Judith Hill?
Yeah.
I think so. Prince had a lot of proteges and people he liked young I mean, old too, I guess, but he liked to be around youthful energy and like help people up, and
yeah,
he didn't own a cell phone, just called. Just regular style.
Regular, just he would, from his landline, would call probably their cell phone and yes. and be like, I wonder if he had a voice, an answering machine, you know?
And probably an 80s style answering machine.
Yeah, because yeah. we do, just because, just in case. Guess what? Nothing's going to happen. But we have it. There's $40 we light on fire. And
wait, $40 a month yeah. for answering machine service?
No, for having a landline.
Oh, landline. Yeah. Okay.
So landline, and then we have all of these phones dotted around the house. The house is a thousand square feet. We have 5 phones. And we only have 3 of them hooked up. One in our bedroom, one in the living room, one in the kitchen. We only get robocalls. And
all day, right?
All day.
At least several times a day.
All day, all night.
And you tolerate this?
Sometimes I unplug it and then go on the road. And I come back and I plug it in. And Andy's like, it was so quiet. And I'm like, yeah, yeah, one day. I'm going to get rid of Netflix DVDs and you're going to get rid of a landline and we're going to be rich.
So this was his doing.
Yeah. Landline is all Andy. DVD, Netflix DVD is all me for no reason, except that they didn't have Babette's Feast as streaming, but have I watched Babette's Feast again? I have not. So,
I didn't even know they still did DVDs. That's actually amazing.
Yeah. The stuff that isn't available on streaming, you can get on DVDs. So
that's so cool.
But it's like $20 a month instead of 10 or 12.
Yeah, but it's physical.
Yeah.
And as I'm saying this, I don't have something to play it with.
You would need to have a gaming device or a $35 DVD player.
Maybe one of my old computers has it. I hate when they phase out holes. Like, you know, the aux cord, USB, the HDMI. Like, we've never thought, oh, I wish this had fewer things to plug stuff in. Yeah. I want it to be all plug-in-able.
Yeah, yeah. Leave the orifices, Dell. Asus, all the... we're almost at an hour, by the way. Rami.
Oh, no.
Rami.
Okay.
I know. Yeah.
Who have I missed?
Yeah, who have you missed?
Did I talk about Jocko's death? The bipolar-ness of it. I mean, you can read into that fully. There's countless stories of how... He was known as just a wacky guy, which had all these stories, and that kind of the legend of him became bigger than him, I guess. So he felt pressure to always make stories and act crazy and do this to where he couldn't actually be himself. And when he died, his heart kept beating for another 10 minutes, which is an old story. They would say, like, his rhythm was so good that even after his death, he still like was
he's still hitting the beat.
Mm-hmm. And the main thing people thought after he died was like, where did all that energy go? That's impossible. Like, how did that much energy then cease? And I'm just looking at this body like it had to go somewhere. That's unreal.
Right, much like matter. It must have been absorbed, but maybe it was absorbed by a baby. And then that baby is going to create the next big thing in bass.
He does actually have twin sons that are in their 30s now, and they're both really good. One plays bass, one is drums.
Oh.
So it's kind of like, yeah, he split off into one that did that and one that did the other one, Felix and Julian.
That's awesome.
There's even a grandkid now that looks just like him. It's odd. And it's even more odd that I know this. I don't know those kids,
right.
But social media exists, and I'm like looking at this guy's kid who's Jocko's grandson. Mm-hmm. I'm like, that looks just like a little baby Jocko.
Yeah, yeah. We know things now about... My Wikipedia page is full of information, and it was set up by someone I don't know who set it up, but I'm like,
is it true?
Why do you know the names of my siblings and my stepmother? Okay. Sure. I was like, well, keep it together out there. No need to be weird about it. And everybody's been very nice, so.
I wanted to ask, I remember this as being true, but does your dad give financial advice to Maria?
He gives financial advice to anyone who will stop moving in front of him. And so I heard some advice and I was telling her, I was doing a bit about how he said, never say no without a number. And then Maria used it
in the graduation speech.
And then she started using never say no without a number as a bit And I was like, hey, that I was writing a bit about that. And she was like, oh, I'm writing a bit about that. And so now we both have bits. And she doesn't do it anymore. It was on one of the last albums. But and mine is on this new album. But Never Say No Without a Number. I mean, it's a the great thing about it is that it's a big picture. Never Say No Without a Number, right? Because Never Say No Without a Number, ask for a giant bag of money for something you don't want to do. And then when they say, you can have a giant bag of money, my father always likes to say, you could still say no. Mm. He's like, what do you care? You don't want to do it. But it was fun asking for 35 grand. And they said, sure. And you go, yeah, it's actually not enough. And you're like, that's kind of dicky, Dad. And he goes, I know, that's the fun part. And I'm like, you are a piece of work.
Yep, that's business.
That's business.
That's how you be good at business, is by being a piece of work. Yeah. You watch Succession. You remember that line where he tells his kids that you think world is about love? The world isn't about love. Life is about a number written on a piece of paper. It's about a fight in the mud for a knife. And like throws out these lines.
My father used to say when we were little, I like to think that I could drop any of you kids in the middle of the desert with a Bowie knife and you would make it back to civilization. And my sister Darla said to him one time, why would you do that to us? And then walked away. And I was like, oh, that is a boom. My sister had some of the greatest lines. My grandmother once said to her, you know, there were four boys, and then you were born, a girl, and all I could think was, now there's someone to take care of the boys. And my sister said, you're thinking of someone else. And
is your sister someone you consider, because so many comedians, like, they have a funnier sibling,
oh,
like, in real life, they don't do comedy. Is she the funnier?
No, she's smarter than I am, but no, they are not funny. I'm the greatest bass player. So I'm like the Mona Lisa. So
you remember,
Ramin, this has been an hour and it has been a delight. Ramin Nazer, you guys, is RaminNazer.com. N-A-Z-E-R. Ramin is spelt like Ramin, R-A-M-I-N. And
yes,
it's at Ramin.
And MindUnderPod.com.
MindUnderPod is
.com
is the podcast.
And most importantly, we have me and Shane, we have a campout festival coming up in September in Raleigh, North Carolina.
What?
From September 9th through the 11th. It's going to be all sorts of bands and comedians and artists and scientists, too, because Shane loves science
really
and he actually
does.
Has connections with scientists. So we have actual scientists like Dan Ariely and Marty Hazelton and people coming to give science talks, which you've never seen anywhere. So go check that out.
And that's in September?
September 9th through 11th. Those dates are coincidental.
That is coincidental because I'm in Greensboro, North Carolina at a different comedy fest.
Oh, cool. We should start a war.
Right.
We should start a culture war because cancel culture has gone too far and not enough people are talking about it.
It turns out nobody wants you to be a dick. The world has not gone mad. Know in your hearts that the world has not gone mad. Try to keep it sane, at least in front of you. But do check behind you. Ladies and gentlemen, Rangers, you know the rules out there. But Ramin Nazer has been our guest. Find him, buy his stuff, watch his stuff, be happy about him because he is a delight. And the things
right
I don't...
back at you.
Oh, thanks. And the things I don't know about music can fill buildings, it turns out. So there are dork forests ahead of us. And Rangers, you know the rules out there. Take care of each other.
My hat, my hat, my hat. They're dancing around my hat. My hat, my hat, my hat. Well, what do you think of that? If it looks like a Mexican hat dance and it sounds like a Mexican hat dance, it's most likely a Mexican hat dance. So take off your hat and let's dance.
Yay! Oh, my God. Why don't we just call that as the end of the show?